Hey friends, welcome. Today's conversation was so moving. I had to take a break because I was tearing up and my voice was cracking. Okay? And it's moving in a good way. It's not moving in a sad way of like 25 puppies got killed. It's moving in a good way. I think you need to stick around and listen to this conversation with author Cynthia Covey Haller and her book, Live Life in Crescendo. Let's dive in. I'm Sharon McMahon. Here's where it gets interesting. I am really excited to welcome Cynthia Covey Haller to the show today. Thank you so much for being here.
Thank you, Sharon. I'm so happy to be on your show.
Tell everybody a little bit about the book that you have co-authored with your dad, who passed away about 10 years ago. Tell us a little bit more about this book and what it's been like to work on it.
Well, it's been an awesome experience, a long journey, like I said, over 10 years. Actually, it was clear back in 2008 when I was talking to my dad about the different books that he was involved in. And he told me about his mission statement, his personal mission statement, the last 10 years of his life, which was this idea, live life in crescendo. And I loved that and really resonated with it.
So what does it mean to live life in crescendo? What does that mean?
Okay. Are you musical at all, Sharon?
Yes. I know what a musical crescendo is. Yes.
Okay. Yes. And I'm not musical. Most of our family isn't. My mom had a beautiful singing voice, but my dad didn't at all. But he chose crescendo because of the sign and what it means, the musical symbol. And that is a crescendo, as you know, when you go to a concert or something, it builds in intensity and power and strength and grandeur. And to hear a crescendo is amazing. It keeps going. It keeps expanding. And the opposite is diminuendo, which is it starts strong, maybe, and then it slows down in energy and power and strength and eventually stops and comes to an end. And so he's talking about adopting the crescendo mentality, which is like kind of a pair of glasses that you'd put on, a paradigm that you see everything through, meaning that in your life, keep seeing your life living in crescendo, meaning you keep learning, you keep growing. You may have to redefine yourself. You may have to start over. You may have had a lot of challenges that set you back, but believe, and the second part of the book is that your most important work is always ahead of you. That idea to me was so inspiring that I did want to be involved in this project. But he believed that strongly that anyone can get through the ups and downs of life if they believe in living in crescendo despite what's happened to them in the past.
Life is full of awesome what ifs, and some not so much, like unexpected medical costs. That's why United Healthcare provides Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans to supplement your primary plan and help manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com. Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
I I hear from people regularly, maybe you do too, where they feel like, listen, I'm 37. It is too late to go to medical school. I'm 42 and I've always wanted to have kids. And is it too late for me? Or I've even heard from people who are like, I'm 27. I feel like it's too late to start college or whatever it is. So often people feel like they are too late. And I wondered if you could address that.
In this book, we go through four different stages and ages kind of life. And we actually begin at what's called the midlife stage. And it is very common for people to think to themselves, okay, I'm 50 and I'm not where I thought I would be. I thought I'd be more financially secure. I thought my business would be doing well. I didn't think I'd be divorced. I didn't think all these things would happen when I'm in my midlife stage. And so we take two perspectives during this stage. This is just an example of one of the four stages. But the first perspective is you may be more successful than you realize. We are kind of redefining success. Society has success as being secondary greatness, what my father called secondary greatness, which is fame and prominence and money and possessions and being well-known, contributing a lot that way. But he called primary greatness being successful in your most important roles in life. And he always would ask people, identify what are your most important roles truly in life, things that will matter to you on your deathbed. You're not going to, you know, all of us have to make a living and have a career. But on the deathbed literature, it does not show people are consumed with talking about their careers and what they accomplished. But they do care about their role as a father or mother, as a community volunteer, as someone that contributed lives around them. So you may be more successful, like we look at George Bailey. You know, I used the example of A Wonderful Life. It's a failure. He hadn't traveled like he wanted. He hadn't done the things he wanted to do. And so when he was said, I don't even want to be here. I wish I weren't bored. The angel takes him out and says, okay, you were never there. And then after he sees what Pottersville was like, he says, one man's life touches another. You had a wonderful life, and to have you taken out changed the whole town, the whole city. So he was, his brother finally toasts him at the end and says, to the most successful man in town, the biggest man in town. So he really did have true success, but didn't recognize it because it wasn't according to society's standards. But for example, if the second perspective is maybe you are in a dead end job, maybe you're not where you need to be. You have relationships that need to be mended with your family, with your children, or different things you're involved in. Take control. Use what my father called R&I, resourcefulness and initiative, and make it happen. Reinvent yourself.
It's always, I feel, encouraging to hear stories of people who have had to begin again. And even though you have compassion for somebody who was forced out of their company, lost their job, you know, life circumstances forced them to start over. There is something that I always find fascinating and encouraging about seeing people who did begin again and who feel that sense of pride and ownership in their hard work, in their accomplishments. And I also love the idea of defining actually what are my most important roles.
Right.
That's a thing that so many people, I think, struggle to do.
Your most important roles that really mean the world to you. My father always talked about setting your goals according to your roles. My father always taught you can't control what happens to you, but you can control your response to them. You know, say that somebody gets cancer or they go through a divorce, their parent dies, something, you know, we all know of stories of really huge setbacks and challenges. Mm-hmm. The question and the challenge in this book is, are you going to live in diminuendo or are you going to live in crescendo and do what it takes to look ahead, to work hard and pull out of it? And so one of my favorite stories in the book is about a man named Anthony Ray Hinton, who was in Alabama. He was in his low 30s and he was falsely accused of killing two people. He was basically framed for this murder, two murders in Alabama, convicted and sent to death row. So he is just devastated. He can't believe this has happened to him. Talk about a midlife and a life-changing situation all at the same time. he was a good person and believed that the legal system would sort this out. And he was convicted falsely. So he's on death row. And he comes into the prison cell so discouraged and despondent, he throws his Bible under his bed and determines, I'm done. That's it. If they think I'm guilty, I know I'm not, but I'm not going to give anything to anyone again. He shuts down for 3 years. He didn't speak to one person, his fellow death row mates, to the guards, to anyone besides his family and friends that visited him once a month or once a week. And he was just miserable, but determined, I'm going to see this through, living in diminuendo, basically. So one night he hears a fellow cellmate crying so desperately at 2 a.m, begging someone to help him with his pain. And it awakens in Ray some compassion. And he realizes all of a sudden, you know what? I don't have a choice if I'm here on death row, but I do have some choices. I have a choice to be compassionate or full of hate and despair. I have a choice to hang on. And I can definitely show love to this person and help him right now. So he breaks his 3 years of silence, comforts this man who just found out his mother had passed away. And he's so devastated. He spends the night talking to a total stranger, getting him talking and laughing about his mother and memories of her. And from that point on, determines, I'm going to be a light. I have a choice to be compassionate and to show my character. And I will one day be proven innocent. And so he, for the next 27 years, literally, he is that beacon of light to his fellow cellmates, as well as the guards. He gets the warden to approve a book club that he's able to hold. He gets certain privileges to help these prisoners transport themselves out of prison. And he also attracts the attention of Bryan Stevenson, who, I don't know if you've read the book, Just Mercy, or seen the movie, a great Equal Justice Initiative advocate. And ultimately, he pleads his case before the Supreme Court of the United States, and he is exonerated of all charges after nearly 30 years. So how does he react now? He's been living in diminuendo. He changed it around. He's expanded his circle of influence. He lives in crescendo to those people around him. And he comes out of jail and he says to his family and friends, the sun does shine. And that became the title of a New York best-selling book that he wrote about his journey in prison 4 years later. Ray Hinton today is an advocate, an author, a speaker. He works with Bryan Stevenson. His life was in diminuendo, has exploded in crescendo now. He is known all across the United States and the world, and helps defend other people that are justly convicted. So truly, Sharon, his most important work was still ahead of him.
I love that story. And I love Bryan Stevenson's work. We just read Just Mercy in my book club. And one of the things that Bryan Stevenson shared with us, which is, of course, he works with some of the people who have some of the most difficult of life circumstances, as you mentioned, where you are on death row for something. And it would actually be absolutely understandable to feel hopeless, to feel a sense of despair, to feel like there's no point. And so somebody asked him in our meeting, how do you stay hopeful? You know, seeing everything you do, hearing all of these terrible cases, seeing people who are falsely accused of crimes, how do you stay hopeful? And one of the things that he said was that hope is not a feeling of optimism. It's not a like, I'm really hopeful that the Jazz are going to win the basketball championship. Hope is an orientation of the spirit. And I just loved that. I just felt like that was such a great way to think about something like hope, which is required to be able to live life in crescendo, right?
Yes, that's amazing. He also said, we are all better than the worst thing we have ever done. And so people need second chances. We all have made mistakes. In his case, Ray was innocent, but he's meeting with people. Some of them have made some mistakes, and other people are, I mean, their choices now are, how are they going to respond? And he is a great, great person, and I admire him so much.
It's that time of the year. Your vacation is coming up. You can already hear the beach waves, feel the warm breeze, relax, and think about work. You really, really want it all to work out while you're away. Monday.com gives you and the team that peace of mind. When all work is on one platform and everyone's in sync, things just flow. Wherever you are, tap the banner to go to Monday.com.
In the words of Dwight Schrute, identity theft is not a joke, Jim. But seriously, have you ever had somebody try to steal your credit card number and then try to make a bunch of fraudulent charges? That has happened to me on more than one occasion. If it's happened to you, you know it's a nightmare. Having your personal information on the internet is like giving strangers the key to your front door. Not good. And Delete Me can keep that door locked and your information safe. And I recently found a solution that is a service called Delete Me. Delete Me finds and removes any personal information that you don't want online, and they make sure that it stays off. It is a subscription service that finds your personal info on the web, searches all the databases, and then helps prevent identity theft by removing that information from all of these databases. So when you sign up, you tell Delete Me exactly what information you want deleted, and then their experts take it from there. They send you a report every month of like, we found your information in the following places and we removed it. More simply, Delete Me does all the hard work of wiping you and your family's personal info off the web. So take control of your data and keep your private life private by signing up for Delete Me, now at a special discount just for our listeners. Today, get 20% off your Delete Me plan when you go to joindeleteme.com/Sharon and use promo code Sharon at checkout. The only way to get the 20% off is to go to joindeleteme.com/Sharon and use code Sharon at checkout. That's joindeleteme.com/Sharon, promo code Sharon. The show is sponsored by BetterHelp. We all have stress in our life. Absolutely. It's unavoidable. It's just part of the human experience. But some of us have more than others, and some of us handle it better than others. Some of us really keep it bottled up, and it can start to affect us negatively. I would imagine at some point in your life, you can relate to this, right? And therapy is a safe space to be able to get some of these things off your chest. And that is why so many people find benefit in speaking to a qualified professional. If you're thinking about starting therapy for something like managing your stress, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online. It's designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist, and you can switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. Get it off your chest with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/Sharon today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/Sharon.
What advice would you have for somebody who feels like their best time is behind them, or they're could currently get no better than where they are now? Not that their life is perfect, but that they feel like, I'm at the pinnacle of my career. I'm the CEO, or I'm as famous as I'll ever be, or I probably will never win American Idol, or you know, whatever it is. But what advice would you have for somebody who feels like the opposite, that their life is not in crescendo? Their life is diminishing.
You know, Sharon, that is another section of the book, is you've hit on pinnacle of success. There are people that have reached the top. Look at a Jimmy Carter, for example. I mean, he's the president of the United States, but in the pinnacle of success, you think, but he didn't get reelected. And so he goes back to Plains, Georgia. What's he going to do? Do what most presidents do and put up a library and give expensive speeches? What is he going to do? He felt like, I still have important things to contribute. Truly, his most important work was ahead of him, even higher than being the president of the United States, because he will not go down in history as being one of our best presidents, but his post-presidency is so exemplary. It's incredible. He came back, and within a year of losing the presidency, started the Carter Center. And he is the face, he and Roslyn, of Habitat for Humanity. They've built hundreds, thousands of homes across the world. In his 90s, he's still active at looking for ways to contribute. John Wooden's another example, one of the greatest basketball coaches of all time. Yet the last third of his life was spent doing what he thought was more important, mentoring, helping people see their potential, and being a leader. My father describes leadership as communicating worth and potential so clearly that they are inspired to see it in themselves. Mm. So think of a great person that is a leader of a, like you say, a CEO or someone very successful. What else can, after they're done with that, would it be best for them to sit on the beach and retire and keep all that wisdom, that knowledge, the connections, the experience to themselves and just let it go? Or what is ahead for that person? It may not be another CEO job, but I'm thinking of a person that just retired. Mike Mason was 63. I just learned about this. It's a great story of crescendo of pinnacle of success. He was a captain of the Marines. He was the number four man in the FBI. He was up there giving speeches, and the presidents would go to him and ask questions about this. He retired and became a CEO of a Fortune 100 company. And then he went to his rocking chair. He said they retired him. He was done. And he thought, you know what? I still have a mind. I still have things to contribute. And so what did he do? He looked around him in Virginia and saw that Chesterfield had 125 less bus drivers than they did before the pandemic. He applied to be a bus driver. And when the people up above saw his application and saw how overqualified he was, being a big man in the FBI, they called him and said, are you sure you're really applying for this? You know what we pay, and you're applying to be a bus driver? And he said, yes, there are no unimportant jobs. We've got to get past that. There are unimportant jobs. I am continuing to progress in my career. What could be more important than supporting the education of students in our community? And so he proudly drives a bus, feeling like this is important work that's still ahead of me, maybe more, the most important I've done.
Mm, I love that. The idea that I'm continuing to progress in my career. I just love that.
Well, there's who knows when you've accomplished your greatest contributions. And in this book, service is a main theme throughout Crescendo. The idea that the meaning of life is to find your gift and the purpose of life is to give it away. That's by Pablo Picasso, surprisingly. And so we talk about, look around in your circle of influence and see who you can affect, who you can touch, see a need. And despite what you've been through, despite the past, don't keep looking in the rearview mirror, past failures or even past successes, but think to yourself, how can I bless and serve my community with what the talents and the skills and the abilities that I have? What a great opportunity.
Totally. I love what you said too about Jimmy Carter, because in the 1980 election, he didn't just lose a little bit, Cynthia. Yeah. He lost a lot. As my daughter would say, he lost a lot of it. Not just a little bit. He lost a lot of it. Yeah. I think the Electoral College vote was like 489-49 in favor of Reagan. Like, it was a trouncing. But it's absolutely true that today, Jimmy Carter is regarded as one of the best former presidents. He's widely admired for his incredible contribution to the country and to democracy via the Carter Center. His contribution to democracy is probably greater now than it was when he was president. He was faced with a lot of really bad circumstances when he was president, terrible economy, Iranian hostage crisis, lots of world events that were heaped upon him, and he was not the most successful at handling them. But then he took what he learned and took his desire for service and had
an even better post-presidency. Like the presidency was lower on his contribution scale than what he did later. And most people would view the opposite. The presidency as being your highest contribution.
Right.
Such a great example that he also did not just, he definitely got beaten so badly, but he did not stay down.
That's right. His most important role was a humanitarian, was like you said, contributing to progress democracy and to help people get a decent home for the first time in their lives. Those were his most important roles. So the humility of the man to take that great, horrible loss, which would be so embarrassing.
Yes.
Think, okay, I'm done. You know, I'm going to end my, this, I had a horrible political career and it's finished, but he literally lived in crescendo believing, you know, I have important work to accomplish, and had the humility to stand back up, accomplish way more than his presidency ever did. He's regarded as our greatest post-president. I admire that.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
This message comes from BOF sponsor eBay. You'll know real when you get it. It'll say eBay Authenticity Guarantee. And you'll feel it. Maybe it's a head-turning handbag, a watch that says it all, jewelry that makes you look like the gem, or sneakers and streetwear so fresh every step feels fly. eBay gets it. So look for the blue check mark next to that thing you love, and be confident that every inch, stitch, sole, and logo is checked by experts. With eBay Authenticity Guarantee, you can trust that feeling of real is always in reach. Ensure your next purchase is the real deal. Visit ebay.com for terms.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
The last section I talk about is the second half of life. You know, my dad always said, it's a false dichotomy to say your only choices are keep working or retire. He said, the third alternative is make a contribution. Mm-hmm. Which do in both of those. One man, it shows a picture in the newspaper, just a man that nobody would know, a picture of all these bicycles lined up next to the church where the funeral was being held. And the story behind it is that this man was known as the bike man in town. He's in his 70s and into his 80s. And any kid that needed a bike, he felt like every kid should have one. So he would find a bike. He would fix one up. He would somehow get every kid in town who needed a bike. And so what a tribute to this man's life. All these children who rode to the funeral and put their bikes against the wall and went in to honor the man, known as the bike man, who didn't have a lot of money, didn't have fame, but he had in his mind, I want to do something for my community and for kids. And I want to give every kid a bike.
I love that. And that was a skill he had. And I don't know how to fix bikes, but I'm glad he does. You know what I mean? And so I think people sometimes get bogged down in this idea that, like, I'm not famous. I'm not rich. I'm not Melinda Gates. I can't give $80 million to the Girl Scouts. I don't have 1 million followers. I'm not beautiful in the way that I think that I should be. I'm not the right weight. I'm too old. They have a lot of reasons that they tell themselves why they can never be as successful or have the greater contribution that some other people can have. But I think we often overlook the importance of using the skills and talents and gifts that we do have in a way that brings meaning, not just to the community, but brings meaning to our own lives. It was meaningful to that man to repair bikes and give them away. It's not, you know, giving things changes not just the recipient, but it changes the giver for the better. It develops our own character. So we do these things not just because it's a nice thing to do to give kids bikes, but because it's good for us to do those things.
That's the happy feeling that you can't buy that when you do something for someone else, especially someone that can't repay you.
That's right.
I'm thinking of a homeless advocate that was speaking to a group that said, make a contribution, do what you can. And a lady in her 80s raised her hand and said, you know, you say that, but how can I make a difference? I am on a limited income. I'm in a facility. I'm in my 80s. I don't have great skills. What can I do? And this advocate said, could you donate one can of soup a week? And she said, yes, I could do that. He said, imagine a single mother opening that can at night and feeding 2 or 3 hungry kids, and they're going to bed being fed. That's something that makes a difference to that family. And that woman thought, well, yeah, I can do that, and contributed the next couple of years hundreds of meals to people who were going to bed hungry. So You have to do something revolutionary. Cross the street and help your neighbor whose yard is yellowed and is littered with trash, but they can't get out because they're handicapped or they're older. I have a friend that had breast cancer, and she finds other people that are diagnosed with breast cancer, goes to their house, knocks on the door, says, can I talk to you? I had it too. I'm standing here. I'm alive. You can beat this. Can I come in and talk to you about what to expect? And gives them hope in that you can make it too. We all have things in the community where you see a need, a food drive or a clothes drive or an overcrowded school. It doesn't have to be extraordinary to make an extraordinary difference. Just start.
I love that. And that also contributes to exactly what you're saying about living your life in crescendo, that our greatest work is ahead of us. And I love that story of the man who's very high up in the FBI who says, I'm continuing to progress in my career. Such a fantastic way to look at it, that there are no unimportant jobs. Transporting children to school is a tremendously important job. Tremendously important job, because the hundreds and hundreds of children that you will directly impact on a yearly basis, thousands of children over a few years, that's tremendously important. The ripples of that, you cannot even measure what it means to assist in the education of thousands of children.
I agree. What an example of true leadership. Mm-hmm. And caring about most important roles rather than, you know, the society would say, well, that's not successful. He's a bus driver. He makes $40,000 a year or whatever, which, by the way, he donated to charity. He donates his whole salary. But to him, the person that interviewed him said, you're saying that this is as important as what you did in the FBI? And he said, absolutely. That's what he said. I am continuing to progress and to go ahead in my career. I'm helping with the educating of the children in our community. What could be more important? I think that we, when you're faced with life-challenging problems or setbacks, if you're stuck in a rut, a lot of us get stagnant for periods of time, and that's kind of common. But sometimes society says, well, you're a victim. Your parents did it to you. Your boss did it to you. You know, you're not in a good situation. You've never had money. You don't have any influence. You know, there's plenty of people around that have shown that if you take charge, take responsibility, use your R&I, Resourcefulness Initiative, and make it happen, amazing things can happen. Nelson Mandela, the second half of life we're talking about, he gets out of prison in Robben Island South Africa at 71 years old. And you'd think to yourself, oh my gosh, it's awful. His whole life is gone. But yet 4 years later, he is dismantling apartheid as the president of South Africa, first Black president ever, with William de Klerk, who was humble enough to be his vice president. He was the president when he was released. Now he's Mandela's vice president, and he goes on to have a ripple effect across the world. You know, and who would have thought his most important work was done when he was in prison? Who knew what lay ahead? And so that's my idea. Your most important work is always ahead. It may not be something like what Mandela has done, but it may be just helping people in your community, one person at a time, and what a contribution to make.
I love that. All right. I think this, you have so many amazing stories and ideas and a wonderful mindset shift away from this idea of, you know, reach the top. And, you know, because what happens when you reach the top? Nobody thinks you live on top of the mountain, right? You don't live there. And so I love this idea that it does not have to just be this downward snowball into obscurity, that our greatest, highest contributions are ahead of us if we choose to adopt that mindset and we choose to live life in crescendo. I love that.
That's the key, Sharon, is to make it a mindset when we're faced with challenges and ups and downs, which we'll all have. And if you haven't had them yet, you haven't lived long enough.
That's right.
It will come to everyone. At the end of the book, I do write about our family's own personal journey, trying to live in crescendo ourselves with three main challenges that our family had and experienced. You know, no one is exempt. We all have to decide, how am I going to respond to this life-changing setback? And is it going to define me? Is it going to destroy me? Or is it going to strengthen me? And those choices.
I love that. Yes, so true. If you haven't experienced any challenges, you haven't lived long enough yet. Well, your book, Live Life in Crescendo, has a lot of lovely, lovely, important wisdom to share. Thank you so much for being here today. I'm really grateful for your time.
I love talking with you, Sharon. I could talk forever. You're wonderful to have a conversation with. Thanks so much for having me on.
Oh, it's truly my pleasure. Thank you.
Thank you so much for listening to Here's Where It Gets Interesting. And I'm wondering if you could do me a quick favor. If you enjoyed this episode, would you consider leaving us a rating or a review or sharing a link to it on your social media? All of those things help podcasters out so much. Here's Where It Gets Interesting is written and researched by executive producer Heather Jackson. Our audio engineer is Jenny Snyder. And it's hosted by me, Sharon McMahon. See you again soon.